Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Low Code Podcast. Today, we have with us Geoff Roberts. He's the founder of Outsetta, which is a very unique tool that allows no-code platforms to have subscriptions and payments, and it provides like a very nice suite of add-ons for a no-code app. So, Geoff, really excited to have you with us today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Cool. So why don't we start by you telling us like the elevator pitch about Outsetta. What does it do? Because it does a lot, I think.
It does, yes. It can be hard to grasp at first. Outsetta is an all-in-one membership software platform. So what that means is we look at membership-style businesses. They can be SaaS products, sort of traditional membership sites, online communities that charge for member fees. And we deliver a set of tools that pretty much all these businesses need. So you'll need subscription billing and payments to collect payments from your customers. You'll need authentication to log users in and out of your site or product. You'll need a CRM to track your members. You need email tools to communicate with your members. You need some help desk tools to provide customer service. So it's sort of a membership business in a box. The core idea is you can deliver your product or website or community however you want, kind of hook it up to Outsetta, and you have a fully functioning business quite quickly.
Do you compete with one tool out there in the market or with several, or do you just compete with multiple tools, like one tool for emailing, one SaaS for subscriptions, one SaaS for different things?
Yeah, we compete with everybody to some extent, covering the categories of software that we cover. So I think of our biggest competition as the founder that wants to go out and buy the best-in-class tool for CRM and billing and marketing and help desk and integrate them all together. Our real competition is convincing an early-stage founder that using our tool set and having all these tools perfectly integrated from the get-go is actually more valuable and going to help you launch faster and be more successful than if you do sort of the status quo of integrating 5 or 10 different tools together.
Yeah. And then Outsetta has like emailing, help desk, CRM, et cetera. Why did you decide to launch those things and not other features? Like what was the MVP? Let's start there.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So in general, the feature set is what we view as the common denominator features that every subscription business pretty much needs. And the business is a classic example of being born out of scratching our own itch. At a previous software company, I was sort of the business user. My now co-founder, Dimitri, was the CTO. And I was going to him saying, you know, we need to integrate Stripe for billing. We need Salesforce for CRM. We need HubSpot for marketing automation and Zendesk stitching all that stuff together. We sort of realized like everybody is doing this. Everybody needs these same tools. There's a huge amount of effort required to do this, particularly on behalf of a single founder or a small team. Let's sort of build the equivalent of what Shopify has built for e-commerce for SaaS or subscription businesses.
Did you first look into the no-code space and then decided to build Outsetta, or you started building Outsetta and then came into the no-code space?
Yeah, we started building Outsetta point blank, not for the no-code space. We were targeting developers and generally technical founders that were launching SaaS products. That was our initial target market. That's what we are as a business ourselves. But a couple of years in, we sort of organically got discovered by the no-code community. And what we discovered pretty quickly was the all-in-one nature of the product, the fact that it was pre-integrated, is that much more valuable to a less technical founder who doesn't necessarily have the skill set to assemble the perfect tech stack. So today our customer base is largely split between more technical founders and no coders. But I think the name of this podcast is really aptly named for us. At the end of the day, where Outsetta really shines is you can use it completely without code. You can also integrate it completely with code. But because we were built for a code-first audience, there's a lot of sort of firepower under the hood that you might not expect in a traditional no-code tool. And we can sort of flex up and become this low-code solution that does a lot of things that other no-code platforms don't.
And then do you think that when you're talking or thinking about new features, are you building those features for? The technical founders, the no coders, or do you build a feature and then build the documentation for the no coders to be able to figure things out?
Yeah, I think at this point, our mindset is basically like we've really honed in on you're a subscription or membership business of some sort. Certainly there are, you know, different shapes and sizes of subscription or membership businesses, but we look at our feature set and what we're going to build as, you know, do 80% of subscription or membership businesses require this particular feature? If the answer is yes, we will build that feature. And I think now sort of the change in our product strategy is whenever we decide to build a feature, certainly we have to figure out how to build it from a technical perspective, but then we say, how do we make this feature no code friendly so that a completely non-technical user can use it? And what we realized is doing that, yes, it makes the product more accessible to no coders, but at the end of the day, ease of use is helpful to a developer as well. So we're kind of serving both audiences.
Coming from the technical background that you come from, working at a previous SaaS and then building Outsetta, and then finding this very lively space of no coders trying to build things without a technical background, what was your first impression of the no code space? Did you think like a bunch of newbies trying to code something without having the background? Have you seen like good robust products built in no code? Like what was your first impression of the space?
Yeah, my very first impression certainly was a few years ago. And I think it was when no code was closer to its infancy. And I think even just over the last 3 years, the quality of the tools available to no coders have accelerated and gotten just so much better. So I do think some of my initial impressions were, you know, these are kind of simplistic tools that are really going to be, you know, not necessarily used by beginners, but could only take you so far. And I think my perception of that over the last 3 years has dramatically changed. Probably the biggest trend that I've seen this year in no code is developers flocking to no code. Two or three years ago, I would mention no code to developers and I'd literally get like laughed out of the room. Today, a lot of the best developers that I know on the planet, period, are saying, hey, can I use no code tools to, you know, accelerate speed to market and make my life easier and give me more time to focus on coding in instances where I need to code. So I've seen that transition happen a lot. And certainly the complexity and general impressiveness of products built on no code has gone up dramatically too. We have multiple customers now that are doing millions of dollars in revenue on no code products.
And do you think in order to build those products, do you need a technical background? Is learning logic enough? Like, what do you think, if someone's trying to get into no code or low code, how technical should they get? How technical should their education be?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things that I always come back to when thinking about this question. One is point blank, I think the term no code probably doesn't do people many favors. It seems to imply that you need no technical skill set in order to use no code. And I don't think that that is true. And the example that I would give is like, if you take a truly non-technical person and you put them in Webflow, they're going to be completely lost. It's going to be completely overwhelming. Yeah. So while it's no code and you don't need to write code, Webflow is a great example. And they've sort of a little bit moved away from the term no code. Webflow is a tool built for designers. And if you don't have a design background, you're going to struggle. So I think no code is sort of not the right name. In general, I do think...
Should we lose the name though? How should no code be named in order to be more palatable?
I think visual development is probably a better direction. I know naming things is important. Like I don't perceive no code as being this like negative thing that's a problem. I do think it is the name that the industry has come to accept and I'm fine with it. I do just think that the one problem is like this perception that a completely non-technical person can use it and use it effectively. If you don't have a background in some fundamental technology concepts, you're going to struggle with no code, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. Now, in Outsetta, you have hundreds, thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people using your platform, trying to build something. And I think SaaS has been a trend for many years, but I think that SaaS has become a trend for solopreneurs, entrepreneurs to try to build something, get some sure. monthly recurring revenue and a couple thousand dollars or whatever, 10,000 or whatever the number is. But I think yep. it has become like everybody's goal. In sure. in your company, you see a lot of these types of people trying to build something. What yep. trends, what topics, what do you see that is working and what is not working in the membership space, in the MRR world?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think in general, like within our customer base, one of the interesting topics is we have these three use cases that are pretty big. One is managing online communities. One is managing what I'd call a traditional membership site where you have some sort of content that you're charging for access to. And the third is SaaS. Indie hackers across the board are interested in all three of those. But those are very, very different beasts. And indie hackers kind of have the same objective with either one. To your point, they're trying to build that recurring revenue stream and give themselves some degree of financial freedom and whatnot. But in short, I mean, first of all, if you're building SaaS, you are going to need technical people and developers and all of that. And I would say a SaaS business is the most attractive, in my opinion, for a slew of reasons. But the time frame to really get to significant recurring revenue most often is substantially longer than the other two options. Sort of the, I don't want to call it a fast path to riches, but the ones where we see mm-hmm, companies mm-hmm. launch and accelerate the most quickly are the content-driven membership sites. I would go so far as to say, if you're an individual person and you've created any sort of online content that you think is valuable, you should throw a paywall up in front of it and see if you can start making some recurring revenue out of it. Like, it's so fast and easy to do that, that I think that's actually probably the best place to start. And then with these online communities are great, but I think online communities take constant engagement. And something that we've seen a lot is people launch these communities and then their excitement for them sort of fizzles out. So there's pros and cons of all of them. I do think you're spot on with your comment that like everybody is trying to do this now. So this is this like really crowded market. And I think the thing that ultimately differentiates people is people that come in and are looking for really underserved markets and not trying to, you know, build in markets that are super crowded and competitive. Those are the companies that we tend to see succeed the fastest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think at Lowcode, we've seen kind of the same very niche products, like especially SaaS, are doing great. And by great, I mean, maybe, I don't know, $5,000, a few thousand dollars each sure. a month. But they're so niche that nobody else has looked into that market. And so they serve a niche audience with a great product that works great for them.
Yeah, I think
it's coming back to Outsetta. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, I think it's great that so many people are becoming entrepreneurs and so many people are starting these projects. But I also think, you know, if you go on Twitter, everybody out there is sort of flaunting the best version of themselves and their successes and making it sound a lot easier than it is. And, yes. you know, I'm not the first person to say it, but the indie hacker world is filled with abandoned and lost projects. It takes a lot more conviction to build this type of recurring revenue than, you know, sort of popularized in the media.
Absolutely. It's hard. And then it requires so many things. It requires not only building the product, so let's say a technical knowledge, but also yep. growing a business, getting clients, getting paid, reducing churn. It's complicated. There's so many things that are involved in that. And then that leads me to my question. How has that worked with Outsetta? Like, did you originally build something, a bunch of features that later out decided to take out because it was not, didn't get product market fit? Like, tell us a little bit more about that that story of how Outsetta came to be. And then yeah. how has the process been from the original idea, like scratching your own itch, to today?
Yeah, the way I would describe our own sort of journey and how we decided on the feature set is, honestly, it wasn't that hard. Like we lived in the context of a subscription business previously. We talked to a lot of other founders of subscription businesses, and we distilled the feature set to the features that we knew all these people needed. So for us, we had an interesting startup idea in the sense that it didn't really need to be validated. Like we had a lot of conviction that people would need CRM tools and subscription billing tools and email marketing tools well into the future. The thing that was unique about Outsetta was this concept of, can we bring all of these together in a single platform? If we do that, is that going to be a better solution? We always had a very high degree of conviction that the answer to that was yes. The challenge for us was, this is not building a single piece of software. This is not building a CRM or an email tool. This is really building four or five different software products. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge undertaking. So I think for us, the learning was, first of all, our MVP, in order to deliver on sort of our stated value prop, had to include all these different features. We weren't delivering the value that we wanted to unless we had this complete feature set. So in reality,
how long did it take to build all of these features?
2 years. It took us 2 years to even deliver kind of the basic MVP of the product. And then from there, the way I describe our journey in short is 2 years to deliver an MVP. Year three, we struggled mightily. Year four, we started to grow. And then year five, and we're into six now, we started to grow pretty quickly. And I think the learning in year three there was, even if you had the basic features, I was going out and I was pitching this product to technical founders and saying, you know, look at what we've built. And they kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, wow, you've built a pretty shitty email tool. There's like 100 other email tools out there that are better. And they were right, to be honest. So
yeah,
I think so many people look at their business through the lens of like, why isn't somebody buying my product? When they should be looking at it through the lens of, why would somebody buy my product? And the hard truth was, we just needed to keep chipping away on our product functionality to get to the point where the CRM was competitive with other CRMs, the email tools were competitive with other email tools. And it took us 3-4 years to get to that point.
Wow. Especially in that space, or those different spaces, those different tools, there are some great tools out there that do email, that do CRM.
Yep.
And a lot of them are either extremely cheap or sometimes even free, or like a freemium.
Yep.
So you're competing with products that might not cost money or might cost just a few dollars a month. And actually today, like Outsetta's price point is pretty low.
It's very low.
Like in the $30 range?
$39 a month is the entry level price point. And our argument to people is, if you really look at like a billing system, a CRM, an email tool, a help desk, a reporting tool, all these tools that we displace, Outsetta is an absolute bargain. And I believe that in my heart of hearts. There's always going to be people that just say, I'm going to use every free tool as possible for as long as possible. Yeah. And honestly, those people tend to not be great customers anyways.
Absolutely. Right. So $39 a month is your starting price. Do you think that's a good price? Do you plan to increase the price? Especially, I mean, yours is a unique tool, but if you look at app builder tools or form builders, traditional in the no-code space, we're seeing a movement of these companies in their infancy just launching and putting a price tag, whatever it is, just to get up and running, get some revenue. And then when they start to think about pricing, they're like, the $20, $30, $50 a month price is not going to work for us. We need to go to couple hundred dollars a month in order for this to work out, in order to hire more people, in order to grow, to compete, to pay for ads. How does that work with Outsetta?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. Coming out of previous companies, one of the things I told myself I would never do again is underprice a SaaS product. I always said, if I do this again, you want to be one of the more premium price point products for all of the reasons that you just named. That being said, if you look at Outsetta's target audience, we sell to startups, and not even just startups. We sell to like day zero startups where they're bootstrapped by definition. They have no budget. So I think that really dictates that we have a very accessible entry-level price point. For us right now, that's $39 a month. I'm the first one to tell you it is incredibly difficult to build a viable SaaS company when you're charging $39 per month. Right. So there are a lot of things that we've done to accommodate for that. The two in short, how we really make money as a business is not on that subscription fee. We take a 1% fee on successfully processed payments. So the idea there is we give people access to our tool set very inexpensively, and then we make more money as they make more money. So we kind of align our interests with our customers.
Aligning your interests to customers that will probably won't scale, especially in the indie in the indie world makers? Like a lot of them are, and we see that at Locate as well. Everybody wants their own app. We built an app for them. It doesn't scale. So is there enough volume for that market?
Yeah. So with our successful customers, certainly that 1% becomes meaningful. But to your point, a lot of these projects never go anywhere. And one of the downsides of the market that we serve is selling to early stage startups. We're always going to see high churn rates. It's just that's what you see with small businesses. We have this sort of weird dichotomy where if a company does go on and become successful, they almost never churn. The churn rate is essentially zero. But for companies that don't develop revenue, they do churn at a very high rate. And that's something we've had to plan for as we have constructed our business. There's a couple things we do to actually accommodate that. We have to make some sacrifices in order for Outsetta to be a viable company. The two that are kind of popular are we don't have a dedicated support team. Typically, like when we look at your traditional venture-backed SaaS company, when they start spending money aggressively on building out internal headcount, they build out a customer service organization and they build out a sales organization. We said, like selling at this price point, we don't have the ability to do either. So we are bootstrapped. We are intentionally a small team. We want to keep the team as small as we possibly can. That means everybody does support, which is unpopular with a lot of people. You know, we have engineers with 25 years of experience answering support tickets. Right. So some people will be okay with that. Some people won't. That's just a reality of working at Outsetta. And likewise, we have no sales team. We rely completely on affiliates to refer business to us. So that's made us selling at this price point something that can be done, essentially.
In terms of marketing, you mentioned affiliates now, but do you do a lot of, I mean, you have a good website. Do you do a lot of content? How do you get clients? Is it mainly referrals and affiliates, or do you create a lot of content?
Because you're
competing with very expensive keywords out there.
Yeah, it's a crazy, interesting marketing challenge in general. So when you think about SEO, and SEO is the example I always give here. You know, if we tried to target CRM or email marketing or subscription billing, these keywords that are a direct descriptor of what we offer, we would waste years. And to be honest, we'd probably never rank highly for them anyways. So we've had to get kind of creative with how we do acquire customers. There's really three big channels for us today. The first is content. We started writing content the same day we started writing code. And I think what's unique about our approach to content, and it goes back to that SEO challenge I mentioned, is we're not really writing content targeting keywords and for sake of SEO. I look at our content as an investment in our brand, and I try to focus entirely on the quality of the content and sort of earn my place in the inbox of other founders. And I think we've developed a pretty good reputation for if we put something out there.
Yeah, I do enjoy your content.
The content is pretty good. So that's been one. The second has been referrals from affiliates. So we use a product called Rewardful for our affiliate program, basically just incentivizing people to publish content about Outsetta online and then pay them a pretty generous commission if they do refer business to us. And the third has been partnerships with other technology partners. So Outsetta is unique in that it doesn't actually help you deliver your product. It's sort of this engine for a business that is delivered on some sort of other technology. Webflow and Stripe in particular are partners of ours. We have like listings on their website. On the Stripe website, it's basically like you can use Outsetta to run a SaaS business. On Webflow's website, it's more like here's authentication and payments and a tech stack designed for Webflow. But those drive us an awful lot of business too.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Are you looking into more partnerships like this? Is there another Webflow sized business that might be interesting for them to set up?
Yeah, this has actually been a really interesting topic of conversation as we've started just like doing some 2023 planning. When we look at Outsetta over the long term, one of the things, and to be frank, I don't know the answer to this yet, is at some point, do we need to offer some sort of front end or some sort of way to actually build a product ourselves? Admittedly, it's gotten easier to tack, you know, payments and other technologies onto all of these products over the years. So can we continue to be this engine that you plug into other technologies, or do we need to deliver something ourselves? I don't really
especially know looking at Webflow, that they're supposedly building users and logic, and so they're becoming a more ideally robust product. And I think they're building memberships actually.
They have, yes. Webflow is awesome. Webflow is like the most supportive partner ever. They are actually going, like, even though we offer some competitive products, they are opening up APIs for us to build on so that we can more tightly integrate Outsetta with Webflow, which is awesome. But in general, with our current product strategy, our success is a little bit out of our hands, to be honest with you. We're always sort of tied to the success of the technologies that we integrate with. And I think we've realized that more and more over the last few years. Webflow has certainly been the big one. I think there's a huge opportunity that we haven't really aggressively gone after yet with Notion. More and more people are using Notion and Super and Outsetta to build some sort of membership style site on Notion. And Discord is one too that is actually something we haven't focused on, but we're releasing a Discord bot next week, and that will allow Outsetta to be used to manage Discord communities. So we're kind of always looking at what technologies are a good fit and also growing fast and with a large audience in their own right.
Right. That's great. So what are your thoughts regarding the no-code and low-code space? I'll say something and then let's see if we agree or not. I think that no-code tools started obviously with a very clunky product, and they all are becoming more robust, especially on the back end and adding more features. Yep. So usually we start with pretty front-end no-code tools like Software and Glide and Adilo, especially the mobile-first solutions. Yep. Very simple backends, and today they start integrating with more robust backends, or they build their own backends in order to handle more data. So in other cases, talking about backendless, Xano, they start with a backend and then they start building the front end.
Yep.
You're kind of not in the middle. You're more backend than front end. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're all trying to do everything. You already mentioned about building the front end, but how do you see the market in general? Do you think that most no-code tools like Webflow, they're adding users, memberships, do you think that they're all trying to do everything? Or do you think that eventually we'll find like specialization? So back-end only tools, front-end only tools, let's say middleware, maybe like Outsetta.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. So as I look at Outsetta specifically, the way that we've sort of thought about it is if you're building some sort of robust no-code product, you're going to need a front end, you're going to need a back end, and Outsetta kind of ties those together. We look at ourselves very much as middleware. When I look at no code in general, I would say I don't see too many companies trying to kind of build the full stack. The one that does come to mind, and there are examples, I think you can argue that Software is doing that, although really their back end is Airtable. I think the one that has really done that to the greatest extent is Bubble. Bubble is, you can, you know, build a full front end and a full back end. But I don't see too many, or at least my understanding is not too many have taken that position. They either tend to be a front end tool or a back end tool. And what I'm seeing at least a lot within our customer base is people are saying, we want to use something like Webflow on the front end. If we have a more robust set of needs on the back end that requires something beyond an Airtable, we'll use something like a Xano, for example, and making those front ends and back ends more compatible, I kind of think is the right direction.
Yeah. So that means that the platforms become specialists in their niche of front end, back end, middleware, and then you end up building a more robust platform because you have the best tools out there for each of the things they're supposed to do.
Yep. I think so.
Do you think there'll be some consolidation in this space in terms of Bubble? I'm just making things up. Bubble buying Outsetta or Bubble buying Xano. Like, do you think there'll be some consolidation, or do you think like we'll stay very fragmented?
It's a good question. It's definitely something I haven't seen yet, is much consolidation or mergers of any sort, or really acquisitions of any sort within the no-code space, which is funny to me. I think there's a lot of great examples. I actually think, while we're on the topic of Bubble, like, I think at some point we will see a great no-code tool to build software that does include a front-end and a back-end. Something like Bubble, but I think it is something that doesn't exist yet, to be honest. I think someone's going to look at kind of what Bubble has taught us about this and start something new and build sort of Bubble V2, essentially. But I think there's a million acquisitions or mergers within no code that could make a ton of sense. I don't think this one would happen, but like, if Webflow wanted to buy a Xano, all of a sudden they've got a great front end and a great back end. I don't think that will happen, but I think like that type of thing is a natural fit. It'll be interesting to see what plays out.
Yes. I mean, the big players, Webflow and the ones that have money, Bubble and Webflow, could buy something. And I don't know, Bubble, I think it's complicated because they kind of do everything, but I think for Webflow, an acquisition might make a lot of sense. But at the same time, now that you mentioned about the next Bubble, I think I see some platforms like WeWeb, DraftBit, maybe even Flutterflow, that you have a low code or a visual builder, but a super robust backend, like a traditional code based backend. And I call it like the no code to low code, and then the low code to code space.
Sure.
And I think that developers feel very comfortable in that space because they see their code. They feel visually, but they get the output is code and they can change it and add more code, whatever. I do think that the next Bubble will be something like that, like WeWeb maybe.
Yep.
It's a great front end, and then you can connect a very robust back end to it. So I think like eventually, I don't want to say no code and code will merge, but I think that developers will feel very much comfortable in something like that compared to a full no-code or low-code solution as the one
that we have today. And bringing back to Webflow, I think that's exactly what we're seeing now. So I actually hadn't made this connection, but the reason that they changed the name of their conference from No-Code Conf to Webflow Conf was because this year, most of what they announced that was kind of new was better support for developers and the ability to actually like build a front end. And I don't know if you've seen this, but you can build a front end in Webflow and export the code that Webflow writes for you directly into a React app now. So those sorts of things and that bridge between developers and no-code solutions is definitely moving in the direction that you mentioned.
Where do you see Outsetta in the next couple of years?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for now, our sort of strategy is much of the same. I don't say this to be uninspiring, but like we're not launching a lot in the way of new features. Like our feature set is huge already, and we're very upfront about that.
Yeah.
What I see us focusing on is really taking each of those feature sets and making them awesome and sort of getting closer to feature parity with the point solutions we compete against. So if you look at ConvertKit versus Outsetta today, ConvertKit's a better email product. We want to get to the point where we're, you know, much more competitive with them on the email front, and do that same sort of thing across all of the tooling that we offer. I think the big sort of question for us as we look at like a 5-year vision for the company is, do we continue to be this sort of technology agnostic product that plays nicely with everybody? Or do we say, okay, we actually see an opportunity. We have this amazing subscription billing engine. We want to launch our own community platform or our own learning management system or our own website builder or whatever it might be. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but it's something we're certainly thinking about.
Right. Yeah, it might make sense. Good. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was fun.